Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. This is part two of what will be a continuing series. We got very, very into the idea, or not into, I don't know, fascinated by the idea of inventors who died by their own inventions. We thought it would be one episode. It might be a series. We thought we would do just one episode on all the people who died trying to fly. But here we are. Shout out to super producer Max Williams. What? Here we are, Noel. It's part two. A lot of people died trying to fly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Part two.
Also, I would like to jump in. This might be very morbid because I've already flown out on vacation by this point. So
we hope you made it, buddy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, don't die. You're safer than you would be in a car.
Really? Really? Yeah. Do you have any statistics about that?
Yeah, we'll get to it.
The stories of people who died trying to fly keep going. I want to introduce a tailor to you now, folks, a tailor by the name of Franz Reichert. He died while testing not an airplane, but his own invention, which he called the coat parachute. He jumped off the first deck of the Eiffel Tower. This guy was fascinated by the innovations that he saw in the early days of airplanes. And being a cool dude, he was also concerned about the people in those airplanes. There were a lot of crashes back in those days. So he wanted to use his tailoring skills to make a, you could call it a parachute suit, which is a fun tongue twister.
Is this like an Inspector Gadget kind of situation?
Super.
Yeah, it kind of seems like it. Like you pull a string and your trench coat inflates and you float gently down to safety.
You got to see the photos.
Also, I want to jump in here because you said the first deck of the Eiffel Tower. So I'm sitting here. I'm like, how high up is that? And from a quick Google search, it's 187 feet. So it's not like he's like 5 feet in the air. He's up there.
Yeah, that's the part of it. So that's the thing. There were already parachutes around. They're what are called fixed canopy parachutes. And there were already parachutes that worked for high altitudes. But our guy, Franz, wanted a parachute that would help for people jumping from planes at very low altitudes. And he said, look, I picture him talking the ear off of his customers, right, at his at his shop. And, you know, he's tailoring somebody's pants, he's adjusting their inseam or whatever, and he's saying, you know, I make suits and pants for a living, but I'm really into parachutes. You guys into planes? And next thing you know, that poor client is stuck there for 30 minutes while this guy tells them all about how these pants would be better if they were part of a suit that was a parachute.
Like a parasuit, am I right?
There it is. So he said, I want something light enough that a pilot can wear it without restricting their movement too much, but I need it to be durable enough to save that pilot's life. If they're at a low altitude, they have to jump out of the plane. How James Bond is this? James Bond is going to show up thematically later in this episode, as you might imagine. And he made these prototypes, and all his prototypes were terrible. Like, he had dummies, he had mannequins, thank goodness, for the first few rounds, and they just fell to the ground. The parachute wasn't catching enough air. He was notable in the public sphere, in the media of the day, and he would say things like, my invention is like nothing else. It's constructed basically half in waterproof fabric and half in silk. Thanks to a system of rods and belts that one can control, the parachute deploys during a fall and will save a pilot's life. That's big talk when all your dummies are hitting the ground almost immediately. Not to be dissuaded, Franz tried one out himself, one of his earlier prototypes. He jumped, he pulled, he tried to fly, he broke his leg.
Yeah. Did you ever do that thing with the eggs?
Yeah.
In school, yes. Where you have to like keep the eggs from breaking, and they're all, you could do it any different number of ways, sort of like Pinewood Derby style. But like a lot of people did parachutes or like, you know, different kinds of packing. But it wasn't easy. It's not easy. And this guy seems like he went to the human trial part of the experiment a little overzealously.
A little too early.
I remember in seventh grade doing the experiment. It was like a couple other classes did it. And all the other classes, like teachers got on top of like a ladder and dropped it. Mine was like a gym coach. He got up on the top and just like would chuck him down, like full like force, throw
him
down.
He's spiking?
Yeah.
That's unfair.
Yeah, he's spiking them from the top of a ladder. Mine did not make it, by the way.
It's a commitment to the bit. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I believe in myself. But yeah, I can imagine a lot of those ending in failure. What happened here, Ben?
Oh, yeah. So he's convinced it's not me that's wrong, he says. It's the way it's being tested. What I need to do to make sure this works is to jump from a higher elevation. That's the problem. I broke my leg because I wasn't brave enough. In an interview before his death, he says, the suit has not had time to make contact with the air. If I had 50 or 100 meters instead of 25, the results would be wonderful. I will prove it one day. And something that really changed his mind here, Noel, or something that really, I guess, compelled him, was the Aero Club de France, who offered a prize of 10,000 francs to anyone who could create a safety parachute for aviators that was lightweight. As long as it didn't weigh more than 25 kilograms and it worked, they would give you 10,000 francs. That's why he starts looking at the Eiffel Tower, and he goes to the police and says, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I made this awesome parachute. I need you to let me jump off the Eiffel Tower. And of course they say, no, you're crazy. That's not going to work.
Yeah, no, we can't be held responsible. You know, it's like, do you think those like fly guys get permission to climb their way up of right. buildings, or like the dude that tightrope walked between the Twin Towers? No, you're doing a crime. And the reason is because liability. People can't be held responsible for the insane daring do of others. So this always involves some form of trespassing. It's also why, you know, self-experimentation is still highly controversial and I think considered pretty unethical in the medical field and in research.
Yes. Yeah. No. I mean, it's true. It's a debate that continues today. And like many other people, I love that you mentioned the fly guy. Our boy Franz decides that maybe it's better to play along. Maybe he should have asked forgiveness rather than permission. But he badgers the police for an entire calendar year. And they finally say, okay, you got to stop coming to the station. We will let you test the parachute so long as you use a dummy or mannequin that's roughly human-sized. You just can't have a living person jump off the Eiffel Tower with your cockamamie parachute idea. And he says, yeah, absolutely. I get it. You know, we are agreed on this. And so around 7 a.m. on February 4th, 1912, he gets journalists, he gets cameramen, he gets friends and family to watch him leap from the Eiffel Tower. That's right, him, not a dummy.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was a an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool,
I just remember, it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car, I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac, Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. Everybody, literally everybody at the scene told him this was a terrible idea. His friends, his family, journalists, a guy who's just working security is saying, don't jump. And he said he had to. He said, I intend to prove the worth of my invention.
So one French paper of note, La Matin, observed that Reichelt's determination to jump caused ripples of unease to spread throughout the crowd. The paper said, quote, among the spectators, only he seemed happy. And then the next morning, they wrote, everyone thought he would kill himself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a jumper type situation. I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. Please, you're making us all really uncomfortable.
You could cut ties with whatever. Yes.
If you
agree.
Yeah. That was a really, that was a golden era of over enunciation in rock singing. You know, it's like, and if you would not want to see me again, I will understand. Like weird, absurd vowel sounds. Yeah. Really nonsensical, but yeah.
I like Noel has a great story about a Third Eye Blind concert, which maybe we save for a live show. Show me your true faces. Franz Reichelt is yelling at the crowd from the first deck of the Eiffel Tower. No, he's seriously, everybody is telling him this is a bad, bad idea. And he says, you are going to see how my parachute will give your arguments the most decisive of denials.
That's a very fancy way. About an hour and a half. Y'all are wrong. I'm going to do this.
Right. Right. He's getting heckled by people who hope he is alive tomorrow. And he's not listening. About an hour and 22 minutes past. So it's 8:22 a.m. He is stepping up onto a small table by the edge of the platform. And he does this move. This is so cinematic. He has a newspaper and he rips part of the newspaper and lets it fly, and he's watching the wind. He wants to see the direction of the wind. Hesitates for a bit, and the crowd is thinking, okay, we talked him down. He's not going to do it, or he's going to use a dummy. And he looks at the crowd, and we don't know exactly what his facial expression is, but he jumps.
He does. He
jumps wearing his parachute, and his parachute folds instantly around him, and he plummets down to the ground.
In the wrong direction, right? Of course, the wrong direction toward the ground. But I mean, the parachute deploys what, incorrectly? When you say it folded around him, that just means it didn't really deploy properly. It was like a wash.
It didn't catch the air.
Right, exactly.
It didn't catch the air.
Did not catch the air. Because again, I keep coming back to this image of Inspector Gadget, but it really was a thing he used a lot. He had this ripcord he'd pull on his gray, you know, kind of iconic trench coat, and then it looked like it would either inflate, which wouldn't make sense unless it was like, you know, airtight. Presumably Inspector Gadget was some sort of hybrid robot man.
Cyborg, totally.
Cyborg, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I think it really was meant to be, because also I would say that the design of Inspector Gadget is based almost entirely on Inspector Clouseau from the Pink Panther movies. The same, you know, fedora, even like he resembles him, like in the shape of his nose and stuff. But I would not be surprised if that was a nod to this guy, the Inspector Gadget parachute coat.
That's an interesting theory. And, you know, as an Eagle Scout, I always admired Inspector Gadget. That dude was prepared. You know, he was walking the walk, maybe in a silly way.
But he was also a fool. And he needed his little niece Penny and her dog to solve his crimes for him from behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I also love that Penny had this thing that she called a computer book, which is now a tablet. You know, it's like,
love Dr. Claw. There is one canonical version of Claw's actual face from an action figure. It is disappointing. No, keep the mystery alive. Don't ruin it.
Oh, no, I shouldn't do it.
Keep the mystery. Don't. No, you'll be disappointed. You're not going to like it. All right. Well, I feel like I'm the crowd at the Eiffel Tower. And you looking for Dr. Claw's face is like trying to test out your parachute suit.
Oh, no. I like it. I like it.
I don't like it. It's disappointing.
He's got kind of like a what's his name? What's that director? Jim Jarmusch kind of hair.
Yeah.
And he's got his eyes scar. Are uneven.
He's got a scar
and his mouth. But I always pictured him being an android too, or someone more like Mumra from Thundercats. So I will say, based on the voice and based on the mystery, was better. But I dig this design in a certain sense.
You know, I maybe I'm being too Hitchcocky and maybe I'm saying the imagination is more terrifying than what's seen on screen. But if you want to see a good reveal of an enigmatic villain, check out Cobra Commander in the animated G.I. Joe film. Now, that was a good reveal.
I also bet you this Dr. Claw action figure fetches a pretty penny if you have an unopened one, because it looks like the boxed version, the face is obscured with like a sticker. It says, "Reveal the mysterious Dr. Claw."
Yes.
I just have a feeling this one is not particularly common, but let's see.
Yeah. Well, one thing we won't find is an action figure of our pal Franz, because it would be in very poor taste. This is not an action figure you want to create. You don't want the army man aspect with a parachute, because his parachute did not work. Noble attempt it was, assured he was. As a newspaper of the time wrote, 2 seconds after he jumps, in a pitiful wreck, he lay on the icy grass. He fell almost standing, blood trickled through his mouth, nose, and ears. His right arm and leg were crushed. His skull and back were broken. He died instantly. But don't worry, folks. The story goes on. There are some more brilliant people who have died trying to fly. Now, there's one that we wanted. I was thinking we skip, but I had some insider info from our super producer, Max. Max, where are we going with this? You promised us an Easter egg in the notes.
So there's actually an Easter egg in Skyrim. It's in Morrowind as well, but Skyrim's the one I'm going to be referencing to. So you just kind of will be like running through the wild of Skyrim, and you'll can happen upon a mage who is like summoning a spell. And when you get close to him, he'll shoot himself into the air, and you'll just hear him giggling and celebrating and screaming, being like, "Oh my God, that's amazing. I can fly," kind of like a version like of that.
Yes, I remember this.
But he reaches like the, like, you know, the peak of his ascent, and then you hear his tone kind of change as he starts plummeting back down to the ground.
Yes.
To more of a scream, and then he splats on the ground and dies, because he clearly had finally figured out how to make himself fly, but he had never figured out how to land.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Gotta stick the landing.
Big part of it. He really reminds me a lot of our first guy, Ben, who jumped off the mosque. That seems like a similar scenario in terms of that "oh shit" moment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Everybody's gotten in over their head in one endeavor or another. And this is, let's put on our car stuff caps really quickly and fast forward to the modern day to a guy named Henry Smolinski. Henry Smolinski is the type of dude who looks at a Ford Pinto and thinks, "Why the hell isn't this already a plane?" I don't know if we've all been there, but that's where his head's at.
Yeah, I do feel as though it'd be cool if we were in more of like a flying cars era of the future. But also, let's just talk about the logistics of that. Seems very unmanageable. I mean, think of all of the personnel it takes just to keep flights, commercial flights, you know, and private planes from crashing into one another. And like all of the, you know, pomp and circumstances around takeoff and landing, all of that stuff. If people were just driving flying cars everywhere, there'd be mid-air collisions left and right. It'd be a nightmare hellscape. Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it, man, but I had a long-standing argument with my good pal Scott Benjamin on the show Car Stuff about everything that floats, flies, swims, or drives, because Scott was very much against flying cars. And I was, to be completely honest, I understood his problems with the idea. He's right, by the way, and you're right, Noel, flying cars en masse are a terrible idea. My position was flying cars are awesome if I'm the only one who has one. And that's the only realistic way to think about flying cars.
You just can't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody.
Because if people know that you have, if people know that Ben has one, then everyone else is going to want one too. You know.
Well, if I had one.
Human nature.
If I had one, you guys know how I am. If I had one, then I would try to get you guys each. I feel like the four of us, Max and you, Noel, and me, and you listening, fellow Ridiculous Historian, I think... It's already gone too far. Who's next? Well, that's the thing. Humans have never been particularly gassed about settling on anything. So as soon as the first cars are rolling out, the first internal combustion vehicles are rolling out and they're becoming a real thing, instantly people look at these amazing machines and say, why can't this fly? The fancy name for it is rotable aircraft. And we know people have been working on this for a while because the first patent for something like a flying car comes about in 1918 by a guy who I put this name in here because I knew we would all love it. Noel, this guy's real name is Felix Longobardi.
Because of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? Felix Longobardi patented a vehicle with retractable wings that also had propellers. It was sort of like a sea to air kind of situation. So if you hit the water, you'd have these propellers that would allow you to carry on, you know, moving. Is it more of a fail-safe, Ben, or is it really meant to be a multi-terrain vehicle?
Well, you know, it never really, wait for it, got off the ground. I think in an ideal world, it's a multi-terrain vehicle. It can be a boat if it needs to be. It can be a car if it needs to be. It can be a plane. It's a beautiful idea. It just didn't work out quite as Felix wished. There was another thing. A guy named Robert E. Fulton creates the Airphibian. I love that name, Airphibian. And this one makes it to the prototype stage. It gets certified by a government organization, the Civil Aeronautics Administration. But again, if you look through your local parking lot, you will see that there are no Airphibians nestled there next to your Camrys and your, God forbid, Honda Odysseys.
Can you imagine a Honda Odyssey in the sky? Ugh, it'd be like,
it
nope.
Haunts me.
Everyone, see Nope, by the way. I'm not going to say anything else. No spoilers, but it's a very cool movie. But can you imagine if Honda Odyssey just kind of came at you from the clouds, dive bombed you, Ben, that one that's been stalking you low these many years?
Well, I'm not gonna sleep tonight. Thank you. Thank you guys for that. You weren't going to sleep anyway. We know each other too well. Yes, you are correct, sir. But what we're establishing here is that by hook or by crook, so many people have tried to make cars fly. And the vast majority of these attempts have been unsuccessful. They haven't made it to a full production phase. Right. It would be weird for you to see a flying car casually in the field. If you see something calling itself a flying car or rotable aircraft today, you're probably at a special event. You're probably not stuck in traffic. But these previous failures did not stop our guy, Henry Smolinski, until, you know, it did stop him.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally. But
it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com. He has some bona fides. He was an aeronautical engineer out in California, and he and his pal, fellow college student Harold Blake, they had both graduated from the Northrop Institute of Technology. They're aeronautical engineers. They started a company pretty recently, 1971. It's called Advanced Vehicle Engineers, and they make something called the AVE Mizar, M-I-Z-A-R. And this is no kidding. Please look at the picture if you're able to pull this up on your browser of choice. They took a Ford Pinto. Yes, the famous Ford Pinto, and they smacked the back half and wings of a small plane, a Cessna Skymaster, onto it. So if you look at it, it looks like a Ford Pinto that had some video game friends. It looks like someone had some DLC, some downloadable content. They did a DLC thing to this Ford Pinto. Okay, it looks weird. It looks like it cannot fly, but they wanted it to, you know, fly. They would use the car engine, the aircraft engine, to take off, which would shorten the time it needed on the runway. And then once you're in the air, you turn off the car engine. And the idea is that it would have wing supports that could extend. You could tie down the wings like any other aircraft. And if you wanted, how Inspector Gadget is this, you could detach the Skymaster part. You could get rid of the wings and the plane engine, and you could just drive your Ford Pinto out.
Yeah, I like this in theory. But again, in practice, sort of another story. People felt the same, at least in terms of the excitement part. In 1973, things were going super well for Sleminski and AVE. And by mid-1973, there were two prototypes that he had built, and three more were in development and actually starting to be built. One prototype was slated for a display at a Van Nuys Ford dealership owned by one of AVE's partners, Bert Bochman. The other prototype was fitted with a Teledyne Continental Motors 210 horsepower engine, and it was unveiled at a press event on May 8th, 1973, and both vehicles were photographed by a very well-known photographer belonging to Peterson Publishing Group, a guy named Mike Brenner, for Hot Rod Magazine. This is a big deal. He's making some waves.
Mm-hmm. I like how you say Hot Rod Magazine, too. That felt really cool. Yeah, they're getting FAA certification. They're doing flights to get this certification, rather, and they partner with someone who will be well-known to any gearhead, any fellow car enthusiast, an automobile dealer named Galpin Ford. Galpin Ford, you might recognize. They have a subsidiary, a custom arm called Galpin Auto Sports, which is the garage from Pimp My Ride. Shout out, Exhibit. You know, he's the guy who heard you like trunks, so puts a trunk in your trunk so you have more trunk space in your trunk. Anyway.
Yeah, and more room for the subwoofers go in the trunk. Also, man, I'll tell you, we were somewhere, maybe it was Dallas. There were a lot of hyper-color kind of like spinner rims.
Oh, yeah.
That was very popular. Yeah. Like those like kind of LED spinner rims. It seemed like there was like a whole gaggle of like, you know, ones running together and like crews almost. Like the dirt bike and ATV gangs that roam the streets of Atlanta. Also those three-wheeled cars that are also very like Tron looking.
Yeah.
There are a lot of those in Dallas too.
Yeah, and they're fun. I have not bought one. I've driven around in one, but they're pretty fun. I just don't know if they're a daily driver because they don't have a top.
They're not cheap.
I
figured they'd be like go-kart prices. No, and they're street legal, questionably so. But yeah, they're like as much as like a sedan.
A little bit of a flex for sure. And here's how popular Smolinski's vehicle was. It was going to be featured in a James Bond film, The Man with the Golden Gun, 1974. And that same year it was featured, it was going to hit dealerships. And if you wanted to buy one of these Ford Pinto Cessnas, if you wanted to buy this, you would pay about $18,300 for the bottom of the barrel, all the way up to $29,000 with all the bells and whistles. At this point, it is time for our inflation calculator. We got some boops, we got some beeps.
And a boop. Boop,
a boop, a boop, and a boop. Boop, boop, be doop.
Wonderful. That is our inflation calculator. $18,300 in 1974 is about $108,173.74 today. I don't want to sound like a cheapskate, but I think that's a lot for a car.
I have a question. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to ask a question that I think no one in the history of question asking has ever asked. Why does there have to be inflation? Why can't things just stay the same, man? Is it about population increase and demand on resources and whatnot?
Is it because capitalism is a Ponzi scheme that will ultimately collapse on itself? These are good questions.
Yeah. It's sort of like why, you know, like companies have to show year over year growth or else, you know, like there comes a point where how is that even possible? And, you know, I mean, it is, or they'll make it possible or they'll do it with like creative accounting. but it's just, it does seem like a losing proposition at the end of the day.
Unless you're in podcasting. Okay, kidding. Boy. Moving on.
we got to show growth too, man. The bosses be looking at those numbers.
Oh, geez. Ah, geez. Well, at least we're not selling Honda Odysseys. So everything is perfect for Smolinski and Co. right now. It's 1973. 1974 is going to be a big year. Everybody's excited. They're doing the test flights. Stuff is looking pretty legit until late August 1973. There's a pilot named Charles Janisse, and Charles says, okay, I'm on this test flight, and right wing strut attachment has disconnected. The wing is unsupported. It's just flapping around like the aeronauts of old. you know that the flappity flappity leads to the splattity splattity. So he says, I can't turn this with the flappity wing. You guys need to look at this. This is a serious design problem. So Smolinski and Blake look at it. They do take this seriously. They fix the strut and they give it a once over. They take it out again just a few weeks later. And respect to them, because they didn't want to endanger anybody else's life. They did, to your earlier point, self-experimentation. Unfortunately, they were not able to fully fix the issue. The support failed once again when Smolinski himself, as the pilot, tried to make a turn. That right wing crumpled. The whole agglomeration of the Pinto and the Cessna crashed. Both men died. These are just a few of the people, not only inventors who died due to their own inventions, but just a few of the people who died trying to fly. So every time you are on an airplane, and one of us is going to be on an airplane very soon, every time you're on an airplane, thank those people.
Thank you for that, Ben.
Wait, I was like, is it me? Who is it? Oh, yeah, Max, vacation.
The guy who hates flying the most. Fine. You have to say that too. Jesus,
aerophobia.
Hey, speaking of landing, I'll send you this Instagram video that'll put your fears at ease. I saw the most remarkable, just absolute borked landing of a commercial flight on Instagram. It, like, the thing, it's just coming in at this absurd angle, and it hits. It doesn't explode. It just flips over and skids upside down to a stop. I don't think anyone died, but, like, what terror? Can you imagine the terror?
Why'd you tell me that also?
Because we want to help you confront your aerophobia, man.
Face your fear, man.
I even, guys, I'm flying Alaska out to Seattle. I even sprung the extra $56 to get business class. Well, not business class. It's like premium.
Comfort
class.
Plus. Okay.
Yeah, comfort plus. Like, I mean, I'm 6 feet tall. I'm like 200-ish pounds. So I'm going to give you an ish there. So I clearly don't fit in most planes. So I got that extra 4 inches. So I was going to be all... It's a late night flight. I was going to enjoy it, but now I'm just going to be thinking about the plane nosediving and, like, you know, cartwheeling down the runway.
And that is the scariest part for me. I fly all the time. The landing is always, that's when things could go south.
I like to sit in the very front or in the very back because I like the bump, you know? If I'm already paying for a ticket, and I fly probably too much, honestly, but if I'm paying for the ticket, then give me a little roller coaster at the end. You know what I'm saying? What is life if not to be lived?
I always grip the seat in front of me just a little bit every time. And hey, haven't had a flipper yet. So you'll be fine, Max. You'll be fine. The odds are in your favor as little as you fly.
Max, get a window seat. Get a window seat.
Hey, hell, get the emergency exit seat.
I love it.
That's the one with the most leg room, you know?
Yeah, it is. Also, it's the one with the most power and responsibility. I always try to fly an exit seat window style. You lose a little window sometimes. You might just get the porthole, but those people depend on you, and it's cool to be a hero. Maybe am I a little too proactive and a little too enthusiastic when the flight attendant asked me for that verbal yes? Maybe I should just say yes instead of hell yeah. These are questions, and they're fair questions. You know,
I was my own kind of hero on a flight recently, Ben. There was a particularly obnoxious child who was sitting next to me, and I had the window seat, and her mother was seated next to her in the middle, and then the child. And this is one of these children that's just like, I want the thing that I can't have.
Give me the window seat.
Which was the window seat. Yeah. I gave her my window seat, and the mother was so appreciative, and the flight attendant heard me do it and rewarded me with Sky Miles.
Okay.
But I mainly just didn't want to hear that kid yowling the whole trip. So it was a sort of a self-serving act. But I think in some small way, I did a service for everyone on that plane.
Well, you got aisle seat,
right? I will take those accolades. Yeah, I did aisle seat. Cool. I'm fine with aisle seat.
Cool.
I like either aisle seat or, of course, window seat. But aisle seat's good because you can get up anytime. You don't have to worry about bugging
aisle
people.
Aisle seat's okay.
I'm also, yeah. I mean, I'm not six. I don't need a window seat anymore. It's fun. I don't mind it. But I think I prefer the aisle seat, except getting your elbows banged.
I like the windows. Planes are amazing. A lot of people died so that we could witness and participate in this fascinating technology. Window seats forever. And you guys, you know, I'll wave to you when you're over on the aisle seat. And I respect you. And Max, We didn't want this to end on a bad note, and aerophobia is a real thing. So for you, my friend, we wanted to wrap today's show with a couple of hopefully reassuring facts. You are way safer taking a flight to Seattle than you are taking a road trip. And there are numerous reasons why. We pulled some National Highway Traffic Safety Administration data back in, let's say 2015. The numbers were roughly the same before COVID. There were more than 32,000 fatal car accidents that led to over 35,000 deaths. That means that there were people who were not involved with the cars who died. They weren't driving. They weren't necessarily passengers. They died. And this means that there were 1.13 fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled. That's 11 people for every 100,000 U.S. residents. Cars are not subject to the same scrutiny, the same maintenance, the same rigorous regulation as planes. So, dude, you are, whether you're in the aisle seat or the window seat, nobody wants the middle seat. Whatever seat you're in, you are way safer than you would be on a road trip, even if you were with me and Noel, which would be epic. We should do a road trip.
Oh, I'd love to. Speaking of our old pal Scott Benjamin, we did an incredible road trip years ago, actually a road rally. We did like a scavenger hunt all across these United States, and it was a delight. But yeah, we should make that happen again very soon. But in the meantime, I think it's time to put an end to this this two-parter. Proactively, mm-hmm. Proactive two-parter.
Yes, that is correct. And we hope that you have enjoyed this as much as we did, folks. Again, every death is a tragedy, but these brave pioneers of the sky have fundamentally changed the way that people interact with their environment. And we hope you tune in for future iterations of this. Let us know your tales of inventors who have died by their own hand, such as, here's a fun fact I throw in because I don't know whether this belongs in a full episode, but Noel, Max, did you guys know the Denver airport, right? There's that big nightmarish stallion statue.
Yeah,
the guy
really
who
creepy.
Made that died as a result of that statue.
What do you mean as a result? How did he die? Who did this to him?
It fell on him.
Oh, my God. That's awful. There's also that insane mural at the Denver airport that's got, like, the weird gas mask kind of Gestapo figure swinging a giant saber across a rainbow of, like, indigenous people carrying dead babies. It's very strange.
Yes.
Didn't they move some of that, or they got rid of some of it? I don't know. It was always very controversial, and there were even, like, you know, all kinds of conspiracies swirling around the Denver airport. This is news to me. This just happened?
In 2006, the sculptor was killed when part of the Blue Mustang statue fell on him, unfortunately, and severed an artery in his leg.
Yikes. I thought you said we weren't going to end this on a bummer, Ben. That's a total bummer.
Right, you are. We don't want it to be a bummer because he, like the aviation pioneers in this series, he did leave a legacy. And it's important to remember that history is closer than it may appear in the rear view. There we go. Oh my gosh, my car stuff's coming out. We got to end the show.
At least he didn't sever an artery in his legacy. Am I right?
Oh, dear Lord, guys, come on, let's end the show already. I'm gonna start ripping off people's names and thank yous
right now. All right, thanks, Max. Yeah, thanks for the check-in. Also, thanks to our super producer, Max. Thanks to
Christopher Hassianis, here's Jeff Goetz.
Alex Williams composed the track. Jonathan Strickland. Mm-hmm. All right, we're out. Everybody have a great week.
We'll see you next time.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.